You're listening to Beyond Bourbon Street, an insider's guide to New Orleans. Beyond Bourbon Street is the podcast where we explore the food, music, culture, places, and people that make New Orleans unique. Whether you are planning a trip, living in New Orleans, or simply wanting a taste of the Crescent City from wherever you are, you've come to the right place. And now, your host, Mark Bologna.
Hey, y'all, this is Mark. Welcome to episode 94. The last show was about the mules and the carriages you see in the French Quarter. I had an interesting discussion with Charlotte Jones, an operator with Mid-City Carriages. I went into that one with some apprehension and wariness about the care and safety of the mules, but after talking with Charlotte and seeing her love for Chica, the mule she works with, I feel much better. If you missed it, go back and give it a listen. I'm recording today's episode on the heels of Hurricane Barry. While the storm mostly missed New Orleans, I got a lot of questions about how New Orleanians prepare for hurricanes. Today's show will be about that preparation, at least from my point of view. We'll also work in the questions I received from our Facebook community members over at the Beyond Bourbon Street crew. A couple things a little different, too. I usually record either if I'm having a discussion with someone out in the field or if I'm home in a little studio we have set up, but I'm exhausted. So I'm sitting at the dining room table. You might hear the air conditioner come on. I'm not sure that I'll edit as much as I typically do, but again, it's part of just sort of giving you the experience. Today's episode is brought to you by our Patreon supporters. Thanks to Chris Marshall, Tamara Ward, Mark Gavin, Dan Tamura, and Andrew Eaton. All these folks joined at the $10 monthly level. They get early access to all ticketed events, first notice of news, behind-the-scenes posts and videos, and more. If you want to join the super crew, head on over to patreon.com/beyondbourbonst. We also appreciate the support from Christine Miller, the head chick in charge over at Two Chicks Walking Tours. Lately, I've been talking about the Two Chicks Ladies of the Night Tour, but today I want to circle back to the Garden District Tour. If you love New Orleans, you've probably wandered through the Garden District. It's beautiful, but it really comes to life when you have a guide who can tell you about the history and the people who live there. On a Two Chicks Walking Tour, you learn about the architecture, the residents, and more. You get to see where Anne Rice lived, where Saint's favorite Archie Manning still lives, and you might even run into actor John Goodman walking his dog. You also get to tour Lafayette Cemetery, just across the street from Commander's Palace. Lafayette's one of my favorites because it's small, it's old, and it has lots of character, as well as lots of characters. Two Chicks keeps their tour group small, and that really allows a more intimate experience. You'll have time to ask questions and really walk away getting an insider's perspective of the Garden District. Two Chicks also offers tours of St. Louis Number 1, St. Louis Cemetery Number 1, and the Ladies of the Night Tour I mentioned. Whatever you choose, know you're going to be in great hands and you're going to have a wonderful time. Use code BEYOND and save 15% over at twochickswalkingtours.com. All right, with that, let's jump into today's discussion. I've made some notes over the last few days while I've been sitting here waiting for Hurricane Barry, so I'll walk you through the things that come to mind in terms of how I prepare, and again, I'll add in the questions that I got from listeners. So let's first start with kind of the basics. How do you determine whether to stay or go? I think there's a lot of things. It probably starts with the storm track and the prediction from the local forecasters and from the National Weather Service. For us, a couple other things come in. One, we have kids now, so I certainly think if you have kids, that comes into play. Also, if you have an elderly person living with you, or if you are elderly, if anyone in the house has special needs, or if anyone has medical needs that maybe make it difficult. I saw in the news someone had evacuated that had multiple sclerosis and most of the time was in a wheelchair and so had medical needs and equipment needs, and they were worried that if they got trapped, it would be really difficult. So that comes into play. I think another thing, especially post-Katrina, is anxiety. You know, this storm that essentially didn't hit New Orleans here in July 2019, Hurricane Barry, it caused a lot of anxiety. And post-Katrina, I feel like New Orleanians in general, we have a lot more anxiety about storms because it had been many, many years before Katrina that we had had a storm that had just widespread destruction and damage. And Katrina is a whole issue unto itself, and it really wasn't the hurricane. It was a failure of the levees. But that's a story for another day. What it did do, though, was really heighten everyone's anxiety. Additionally, we've just had ongoing issues lately with the sewage and water board, who are responsible for the pumps in the city. And so there's not, at least from my lens, there's not a high degree of confidence in the infrastructure. As a result, that just kind of amps up everyone's anxiety even more. And so this week, as I'm recording this, on Wednesday, we had like 8 or 9 inches of rain in about 2 hours here in the city. And streets flooded, some homes flooded, parts of the city flooded that just typically don't flood. And so you had that, which wasn't related to the tropical storm, which became Hurricane Barry. But all of those things really contributed. And I got to say, at least in our neighborhood, I think I'm the only one on our block that stayed on both sides of the street. And I've never seen that happen before. At the same time, we had a tiny bit of water, some seepage come in under the doors on Wednesday, and we hadn't experienced that. So I think you kind of got to just think about your personal situation and what your plan is, and we'll kind of get into that. I also think if you have a spouse or a roommate, significant other, whatever, you really got to take into account jointly what your feelings are. In our household, typically what we do now is that my wife and the kids will evacuate. My parents live across Lake Pontchartrain, so they live a good ways from the city. It's higher ground there, not that they don't have their own challenges with water and winds and that sort of thing. But for us, we feel better about getting the family out. I tend to stay in the city, one, to try to help out at our house, but also because of my job, if I need to be able to get back to the office relatively quickly. So that's just a personal choice, and I think you find people kind of weighing those things and kind of where they're at in life. I also think you need to consider the likelihood of flooding near you. So what's interesting about New Orleans that many outsiders might not realize is typically the closer you are to the Mississippi River, the less likely you are to flood. And the reason for that is those are the oldest levees. You tend to be on higher ground, probably over thousands and thousands of years of settlement and sediment building up. But the closer you are, generally speaking, the less likely you are to have water. But in New Orleans, you can be in a dry spot and 2 blocks over, it can be very different, or even a block over, it can be very different. So it's really important to consider whether your neighborhood's flooded before. And if it floods, how would you get out? And we'll talk about that later. Another thing to think about is possible damage. So if you have a lot of trees around you, if you know you're in a low-lying area, if you've had problems at the house before, all those things kind of got to play into the decision. I mentioned just a minute ago, what are your options if you stay and it goes bad? So how do you get out? Do you have a way out? And this was something that Marie and I discussed. We have a multi-story house, so it's very unlikely water would come up so high that we wouldn't have a safe place to sort of stay and wait. But if the city floods and you're essentially on an island at your house, what do you do? And what do you do with young kids and all that sort of stuff? And so you got to think about that. What are you going to do? How are you going to get out? So in my case, without sounding dramatic, it's just part of the preparation. In our case, we talked about, okay, well, I can put things higher up in the house. I'll be fine. If it ever got to the point where I was here and we had that much water that it was a concern, one of the last things Marie asked me was, well, what do you got for a flotation device? Do you have a raft? Do you have a lot of people have pirogues or canoes or kayaks, right? It sounds crazy. And hopefully no one ever has to use that again, but people have had to use that stuff in the past. So again, it's not that I'm trying to scare you, it's that it's just these are the kind of things that you have to think about. Another thing that doesn't often get talked about, certainly from a national perspective, you see on the news and you wonder, why are people staying when storms are bad? Sometimes people don't have a choice. If they don't have transportation, how are they going to get out of the city? If they don't know anybody with transportation who can get them out of the city, even if they do, where are they going to go? Do they have family somewhere else? Do they have friends somewhere else? Church? Can they get a hotel reservation? Can they afford the travel and the transportation and a hotel and food and all those things? Another consideration is pets. And this was a big, big deal in Katrina, and you've seen it elsewhere across the country. So if you have to evacuate, what are you going to do with your pets? You obviously need to take care of them, but are you going someplace that can take the pets? Is your pet healthy enough to travel? All those things you have to think about. And again, do you have the money to go? You know, New Orleans is a city that people love to visit, and we obviously love living here. but it's a place where a lot of people don't make very much money. And so they may not have, it may not really be a choice to go. And that's one of the things, again, when you see that on the national news, you really need to think about it. It's not an easy decision to stay or go. And there's so many variables. Another one is your employer. So some people, if money is super tight, what the employer is going to do matters. Even if you have a place that has benefits and insurance and vacation time, the employer may or may not make you take that vacation. So all those things that maybe aren't obvious on the surface, you have to consider. Again, for us, you know, we take into account the fact that we have a family, we have young kids, and our past experience, our family's past experience in the storm. So that's just a few things. Also, the city will typically put out guidance, and you'll know. The good thing about hurricanes, I guess, is that we typically have a lot of a couple days worth of knowledge about what's likely to happen. So you kind of got to weigh all of that and make your decision. So moving on a little bit, let's talk about if you decide to stay or go, what do you have to do, right? And I have a list here that I kind of went through. So a couple things. Before hurricane season starts in June, you need to be prepared and things like insurance. So flood insurance is separate than hazard insurance, and your hazard or homeowner's insurance isn't going to cover if water rises up in your home and your house or your car gets damaged. So most New Orleanians, I think, post-Katrina have flood insurance, whether they're in a mandatory flood zone or not. But that's an important thing and certainly a worthwhile thing. The other thing is post-Katrina, most hazard and homeowner's insurance policies in the city have a pretty high deductible for named storms. So once a storm gets a name, a tropical depression, tropical storm, or a hurricane, you can only claim on your insurance, on your hazard insurance, let's say the roof blows off. So that's not going to be covered by flood, but it could be covered by your hazard insurance. But typically these days, the premium or the deductible is really high. So for us, I think it's 5%. So 5% is the deductible to claim something as a result of a named storm. You also, it's important to know, you cannot get insurance once a named storm is in the Gulf of Mexico. So it's too late. If someone looked up Thursday or Friday and said, gosh, maybe we should get the flood insurance or upper hazard insurance or whatever, you're not going to be able to do that. So preparation in this case means really thinking about these things ahead of time. So once all that's happened, you got to decide whether you're going to stay or go, as we talked about. You need to pick up loose objects. So I went around the other day and picked up we had hanging plant baskets, picked up furniture outside, kids' toys, anything that might be outside, secure garbage cans, and I think we have a question about that later on. But all the things that could fly around if there was hurricane force winds, right, or even tropical storm winds, you need to pick that stuff up because it's going to break things. It could break a window. It could also clog the storm basins, the catch basins, and I'll talk about that in a moment. So you want to pick all that up. You want to think about, sadly, post-Katrina, one of the things that I think many of us didn't realize and came to experience is that when there's a lot of water, stuff floats, and it's going to float all over the place. And so you want to be mindful, you know, first outdoors of bundling up stuff and trying to limit where things could go. Just the other day in the rainstorm, I got home and the garbage can had been on the street and it was two blocks away. And it's a pretty heavy garbage can. And that's what you see. You see stuff floating away. Because often in New Orleans, the biggest issue is not typically the winds, but it is the water. And typically that's because of flooding in the city afterwards. Another thing is moving your car to higher ground. And I know we had a question about this. So in New Orleans, medians are called neutral grounds, right? And when a storm is coming, the city will usually put out a notice saying it's okay to park on the neutral grounds. And the reason you would do that is it's sometimes just a couple feet higher than parking on the street. And if you know your neighborhood well, it doesn't take much rain for the street to fill up. And so it might not seem like a lot, but when you think about streets being slanted or sloped, getting up on the neutral ground really makes a difference. In fact, I took a picture the other day on a street where someone left a car up against the curb. And right in front of them, someone moved their car up onto the curb, which is not really legal, but onto the sidewalk. So it was right next to it. And it was easily a 2 or 3 foot difference. So that really matters. It's one of the things to keep in mind. Another issue is other options for moving your car to higher ground. So in my case, I have access to a parking garage at work. So I took the car and put it in the parking garage and then took a Lyft home before surge pricing and before all that stuff stopped. Sometimes people can, you can find a spot at your work or at a hotel. I talked to a couple people who are parking in parking garages at local hospitals. And I even noticed as I was walking around the last couple of days, if businesses are closed, like there's a nearby grocery store, that lot looks to be a couple feet higher than the street. So that would be an option. Again, all you're trying to do is get your car up and out of possible flood area. But that's something you need to think about. And certainly if you go and you're taking your car, then that's fine. But what if you have multiple cars and you're only taking one of them? So that's something you need to think about. Additionally, if you are leaving the city, you want to think about, and this is something New Orleanians learned after Katrina, you want to think about what if the power goes out. And so if the power goes out for any length of time, the stuff in your refrigerator and your freezer is going to rot. So we typically try to clean out the refrigerator, particularly if you're leaving. Try to think about that. Get rid of everything that you can. In the freezer, whether you stay or go, it's a good idea to freeze, well, one, maybe to purge the stuff that you need to get rid of anyway, but to freeze things like water bottles or put extra ice in there so that you're limiting the air movement and you're keeping as much cold as can be. But if the power's out for very long, stuff's going to defrost. And so here's an insider tip. If you're going to leave, or really if you're going to stay and you don't have a generator, and we'll talk about that as well, you want to take a cup or a glass, not a glass, but you want to take a cup and fill it with water, let it freeze, and then put a coin, like a penny or a quarter on top of it, and put that in the freezer. The reason you want to do that is when you come back, you want to check it. And if that quarter or penny or whatever you put in there is below the surface, then you know that the power went out and that it defrosted and then refroze. Because if you don't do that and you're not around, you won't know. And so it could be that you lose power for a day or two and then it comes back and everything freezes back before you're back in the house and you think, oh gosh, everything's fine. And then you're going to have a real problem when you go to eat that food. So that trick is very helpful. Another thing that New Orleanians noticed, and I saw my Aunt Mo posted this in our Facebook group, is that if you're going to leave and you don't have a power source, and you're going to leave stuff in the fridge or the freezer, put it all in garbage bags in the fridge or freezer. That will make it much easier to clean up when you come back. And one of the sort of enduring symbols of Katrina were all the refrigerators on the streets. They were often taped up with duct tape with signs saying, do not open. Having come back, we weren't living in the city at the time, but my parents were, having come back and helped muck out their home and our restaurant, I can tell you one of the absolute worst things to do is to have to deal with food that's 6 weeks old and hot and moldy and disgusting in refrigerators and freezers. There's almost no smell like it. It's disgusting. And so if you put everything in garbage bags, then at least it makes that cleanup a lot easier. So just some things to think about there. Also, if you're going to leave, you probably want to disconnect anything that's electrical, computers, televisions, that sort of stuff. And you also, where you can, if the house is prone to flooding, you want to lift up stuff that's valuable. So even a couple inches can make a difference, you know, whether it's your TV or your furniture, whatever it might be. If you have a multi-story house, then you probably want to move anything off the lower floor that you value up onto a higher floor. In a really bad situation, or when you're going to leave, another tip is to close the doors of each room. And that probably sounds weird, but what we learned in Katrina is that when there's massive amounts of water, stuff floats, and it will float all over the place. And if you've at least closed the doors, then things will stay in the rooms where they were, which one might contain small things, but also, and if it comes to that, then obviously you have really big problems, but it just kind of keeps things contained. We saw stuff all over my parents' house in different places, and I know people experience that. So again, that's sort of a worst case scenario, but again, if you're going to leave, it's something to consider and something to take care of. So I'm going to shift a little bit and talk about what if you stay, and I'm just reviewing my list real quick. while I'm doing that, just to think about other things. Oh, another thing, and this is important whether you stay or go. If you think your house is prone to a little bit of water, you want to sandbag the doors. And so there's videos you can see online, but basically you want to lay down sandbags as if you were bricking. So you want to put them kind of overlapping, and then you want to reverse directions as you go left to right or right to left. Even better is to lay down some plastic sheeting and then put the first row or second row of sandbags and then wrap and fold the plastic sheeting into it, so you end up with a structure that is essentially less permeable, right? It probably won't stop all the water, and if it gets too high, then nothing's going to stop it. But at least if you're prone to getting a little bit or a couple inches in, it may either stop it or at least delay it. If I remember, and again, I'm really tired, but I'll post. I took some pictures of the sandbag barriers that I put together this week. I'll post those over in our Facebook group, again, at Beyond Bourbonists. No, that's actually going to be the Beyond Bourbon Street crew, K-R-E-W-E, on Facebook. And if I think about it, I'll put it in the show notes, which will be beyondbourbonst.com/94. And again, forgive me a little bit. I'm exhausted, and we'll talk about that as well as we go. So let's see. If you stay, well, again, I guess I'm going to go a little bit further. If you go, what do you need to take? You need to take proof of insurance. You need to take your keys. You need to take proof of residency so that you could get back in if there was sort of a controlled entrance back, which there are sometimes if the storm's really, really bad, like Katrina. You need to take anything that you value that's irreplaceable. So if you can fit it, family memories, pictures, certificates, whatever it might be, jewelry that's really important that you don't want to lose. You want to take cash with you. You want to make sure your car is full of gas. You want to bring things like portable USB batteries to charge anything that you take with you, a flashlight, those sort of things. So you want to think about, you want to take a couple days of clothes. My parents, when they left for Katrina, they really only left because they were planning on going out of town anyway to see my brother. And so they only took a couple days of clothes, and they were gone essentially for 6 weeks. And when they came back, everything was destroyed. So what they had was what they had taken with them. It's a good idea before you need it to kind of think about what are the things that are really vital. Medicines, for instance. I wear glasses and contacts, so that's really important, right? But to have that stuff ready to go, a big Tupperware or Rubbermaid type container with, again, papers, if you have mortgage documents or credit card information or whatever it might be. And again, certainly family things like artwork I'm looking at the kids' drawings that are irreplaceable, that kind of stuff. You want to have it all ready to go. And also keep in mind, you are limited by the space you have in your vehicle, right? I want to shift a little bit and talk about if you stay. So I've already mentioned, in my case, we have a generator. It's a relatively inexpensive gas-powered generator that's very loud, but we have what's called an inverter, so you can run a heavy-duty cord from the generator to an inverter box right next to the electrical panel, and then you can adjust the breakers. And so ours will run essentially everything in the house except air conditioning. Remember that hurricanes typically come in the summer months when it's hot, but the main concern for us was the refrigerators, right? So it'll run everything, and then we have a little portable, from Home Depot or Lowe's, I guess, a little portable air conditioner. It's not a window unit. It's kind of a freestanding thing, but it'll keep a small room cool, and it's certainly something. It also, again, that generator allows us to keep the refrigerators going, to keep some fans running, that sort of thing. And also I can recharge electronics and stuff if I need to. So that's one option. Another thing that's become somewhat popular post-Katrina are home house generators. And these are connected to the electrical system of the house. Some of them are powered by natural gas. Others are powered, by battery packs. They're pretty expensive. They can run several thousand dollars. So that's obviously going to be prohibitive for a lot of people. We have this gas-powered generator, so you got to make sure you have gas. But I have two plastic gas cans that I think hold 4 or 5 gallons each. And the generator will hold, I think, about the same. That generator, if I left it on continuously, would run 5 or 7, maybe 8 hours. And so, you know, that gives me a couple days worth. But of course, if it came to that, I would probably not run it continuously. So you can stretch that out. This idea of running a cable to this inverter box helps eliminate the need to run a bunch of extension cords from the generator. So that's something to keep in mind. Another thing that's very, very important is, and more important, is to have food and water. So you want to have, they say, about 1 gallon of water per person per day. So you want to have several gallons of water available. And you want to be also thinking about things like if you want to be able to flush a toilet or wash or cook, that you need water for that. You want to have non-perishable foods. New Orleanians, if you've been on social media this week, you have seen most likely that this tends to be like there's a lot of eating, a lot of snacks, a lot of junk food. I've eaten more Pop-Tarts in the last 48 hours than I've had in 10 years. But you want non-perishable things, soup. Sometimes people get Spam or Vienna sausages used to be a thing like when I was growing up. I don't really know anybody that does that anymore, but certainly in the 70s and 80s, I can remember being trapped and Vienna sausages were something that you would have. But you think about soup or even MREs if you have them. But you really want to think about that and having food that if you're going to stay, that you have a couple days worth of supplies, right? You also want to have batteries, so for flashlights, as well as USB type batteries, right? Portable chargers. So now we have so many electronics with phones and laptops and devices. You want to charge up all of those batteries and all of those devices ahead of time and leave them charged as long as you can so that you have something to sustain if the electricity goes out. Flashlights, I mentioned, the generator, I mentioned, sandbags. Again, you want to have cash. You want to have a bug out bag, so an emergency bag. If you choose to stay, again, back to that idea of what do you do if you have to leave? If you have to leave, then it's probably going to be an emergency, and so you want to be ready. So in my case, I have a backpack ready to go with a change of clothes in a Ziploc bag, some extra cash, battery, you know, the USB battery ready to go, the medicine, my phone is ready. I have a swimsuit because, again, if I'm going to have to leave, it's going to be because there's a ton of water, so I want something that's quick drying. I have keys to the house. In this case, my car is parked somewhere else, so I have those car keys there. I have just a couple important papers. Again, my wallet. When I've been in the house the last few days during the storm, I've had my wallet on top of that backpack so that I don't forget it. And again, if you had anything, my wedding ring, for instance, I haven't worn it the past few days just because it's been hot and sticky. And so I have that in a little container in the bug out bag because that's important to me and I don't want to forget it. And you want to keep that where you can get it. So you want to keep it near the door you would go out or near the window you would go out, because if you get to that point, you're not going to have a lot of time to think. So you just want to be executing on your plan at that point. You also want to think about how you're going to get out. So I have sandbagged some of the doors, and the way that I would get out of the house, I have the keys in the door so that I'm ready to go. Again, I don't want to paint this as so dire, but if you're going to stay, you need to think about these things. Also, shrimp boots or rubber boots. Most people in Louisiana and New Orleans have boots, either for fishing or shrimping or because of floods or cleaning up or maybe even Jazz Fest. You want to have rubber boots. If you got to walk outside and it's flooding, the water's disgusting. You don't know what's in it. It could be debris. There could be sewage. There could be other people's stuff floating out. There could be chemicals. You just don't know. So you want to have rubber boots. Again, I've grown up in Louisiana, been here most of my life. We have plenty of pairs of boots, so I have them positioned at different places so that I can, near the doors, so that I can just put them on and go on out. You definitely want to have shrimp boots or black rubber boots or whatever they might be. You can get those at sporting goods stores, at Walmart, at those kind of places. So you want to have all of that ready to go. I think this might be a good time to just stop and look at some of the questions I've gotten. Emmett Dupas, who's a really good friend of mine, posted, "Why is it that some people in New Orleans stock up on alcohol for these quick storms?" So he's being a little bit tongue-in-cheek, but you certainly hear about hurricane parties. And at least from my lens, it ultimately has to do with anxiety and stress. You know, we like to have a good time here in New Orleans. We like to joke around about not being afraid of hurricanes. But the reality is when you choose to stay, there's not a lot to do once you've sort of hunkered down. I went for 3 walks yesterday when the weather allowed, and this was a storm that really didn't amount to much, just because you go a little stir crazy. But I also think, even like this with Hurricane Barry, that really did nothing in the city, it's stressful because you don't know if it's going to do anything. And, you know, having alcohol tends to take the edge off. And I think having hurricane parties or having friends over who stayed, it's just sort of that common bond. I mean, I can't tell you, like, I'm worn out. And it's not that, other than prepping the other day, it's mostly been sitting around. And I think that's just kind of a natural thing. Let's see, Nancy McDowell asks, I'd love to know what the laundry list of things to do are when preparing for a storm. So I'm kind of going through that now in terms of supplies and prep, and we'll get into that a little bit more. Dia Gully, who's a relatively new Orleanian, says, cleaning storm drains, I put garbage, leaves, debris in the bin. I don't want it to fall over. What's the best ways for securing it if you don't have a fence? So first of all, this point about the storm drains. So in New Orleans, of course, like most places, the city has contracted to keep the storm drains clear, but the reality is they're never kept up enough. And so one of the important things to do on your block is to go check the catch basins and make sure they're free of debris, whether it's trash or limbs or leaves. We have lots of live oak trees here and lots of leaves on the ground all the time. And so you want to clear all that out and also help your neighbors, right? Help them get debris off their lawn and in front of their part of the street, so that when the water starts flowing, it can get into those storm drains. In terms of Dia's actual question about securing garbage cans, if you don't have a fence to put them behind, I think you can use rope. You could put bricks in the bottom of it. You could use bungee cords. I saw one person, all they had was, my friend Carolyn, all she had was Christmas lights, strings of Christmas lights, so she used that as rope. It's also one of those things, if you've stayed and you look up, it's good to kind of do a little after action report internally, if you will, and think about the things that you didn't have or weren't prepared for and get those squared away for next time. I have a bunch of bungee cords that I pulled out and just had ready to go to secure things like that. So that works for me. Let's see, before I go back to my list, let's look for a couple more questions here that I got from listeners. Bruce McGee says, why Vienna sausages? Again, I think that was really like a 70s or 80s thing. I'm sure somebody still eats them, but I don't often hear that today in terms of packing. Jennifer Costa asks, when or how do you decide whether to board windows? That's a good question. And at least from my perspective, it generally depends on how direct the storm path is likely to be. So if it's likely to come straight into New Orleans, as well as what they are forecasting the impact to be. Is it going to be water and lots of rain, which was the prediction for Hurricane Barry? Or are they predicting like real sustained hurricane force winds for a long time in the city? So you kind of got to judge, because you would put the boards up if you're worried about flying things, right? Things breaking the windows and doors. For this storm, I didn't see anybody put up boards in our neighborhood. It was mostly about the threat of water, because that's what they had said would be the issue, if anything. Jennifer also asks, when you return, what's the thing you have to do first to reconnect? Well, again, it kind of depends on the circumstances, but the first thing I would do, I think, is check to make sure there was no water in the house. I would also check the freezer to see if that cup that you froze and put the penny on top, whether or not the penny had sunk down and refroze. So that would tell me whether or not the food needed to be cleaned out. Most people go deal with the food first. And then you do want to just check again. If there's no water, then you know that's not a big deal. But if there's a water line or you know you got a lot of water, you want to make sure that the power's off. You know, so before you start mucking out a place or cleaning up, you want to make sure you're not stepping into water that's running in and out of, say, electrical sockets. So you want to turn the electricity off, right? Let's see. Michelle Juno says, typical hurricane snacks, what are they? And why is it so hard for people not to eat them? I would think that your snacks are some of the same food you would eat normally. Well, as I mentioned, I think, at least for me, and certainly if you've been watching NOLA Twitter the last few days, there's a little bit of stress eating, a little bit of anxiety. It reminds me a little bit of Mardi Gras in that our diets tend not to be the best at Mardi Gras. But it's the combination of things that are non-perishable, as well as it's just anxiety-inducing, you know? In my case, I spent about a day the other day getting the house ready, lifting up things from downstairs that I didn't want to get wet, trying to build proper sandbag barriers, trying to think about what happens if water gets in. So I had towels staged. I shoved some old bicycle tubes underneath the seam at the bottom of the door that leaked the other day. Got the wet vac ready, all those kind of things. Made sure I had the food, make sure that I knew how to use the generator and I had the instructions ready. So just kind of a, you know, stress eating, I guess, is the best way to put it. Jamie Quick says, I have a lot of family in southern Louisiana, but I've always lived in the more rural parishes. So I'm interested in how storm prep differs in the city. Is there a difference? I'd also like to know more specifics about how the drains and pumps work and what the controversy is there. So this kind of gets us back to preparation. I've talked about individual preparation a lot here, but in New Orleans, so basically New Orleans is a bowl. Contrary to what people think, the whole thing is not under sea level, below sea level, but about 50% of the city is below sea level. And we've had Richard Campanella on the show several times, and he's talked about that and how and why the city, essentially because of our efforts to control the river and to divert water out of a swamp, we've caused the city to sink. But that's a story for another day. What it means is the way New Orleans is defends against storms is twofold. One, we have a levee system that goes around most of New Orleans and is also controlled by various locks, sort of mini dams at different points in the city, both on our canals and also at certain intersections. So the other day, they made the decision to close all the locks in the city, the river gate or the floodgates, which effectively means you can't get down a road, right? Because they've put this big concrete barrier with a gasket, they've sealed it off. The other part of that, though, is because we're mostly below sea level, any water that comes in from rain or if a levee would break or anything like that, the water can only get out by being pumped out. So we have this system based on something called a wood screw. The pumps here are more than 100 years old, and effectively what they do is they pump the water out. They pump it into the canals, which then go, depending on the direction and where they go, between Lake Pontchartrain and the Mississippi River. That's a real simplification, and one of the things we're going to do is get an episode together about the pumps and how that works, and I want to do a separate episode about coastal restoration and wetlands erosion, and maybe a third one about the efforts to control the Mississippi River. There's a really good book about the flood of 1927 that kind of talks about the resulting what happened and how we've tried in the United States to control the river and some of the effects of that. Again, those are all probably future episodes. But that's some of the things. Let me go back and take a look at my list real quick. We've talked about whether to stay or go. We've talked about how to prepare in either event. Talked a little bit about supplies, if you stay or if you go, what to take with you. I want to talk a little bit about information sources. So one of the real frustrations this week has been the national media. So there have been stories in some really respected national outlets that are just wrong, talking about New Orleanians being gripped by fear, New Orleanians being underwater still from Wednesday. Those things aren't true. The best source is local media. We have really great local reporters, many of whom grew up here or have spent years here and know what they're talking about. So whether you're here in New Orleans or you're away and thinking about New Orleanians and friends and family, I think these days, local TV, so the television stations that I typically look at during a storm here in New Orleans are WDSU and Fox 8, local radio, WWL. Not so much for information, but WWOZ is always sort of a calming presence in the music. But you can also go on Twitter and follow WDSU, Fox 8, WWL. Margaret Orr is a terrific local weathercaster who is also very active on Twitter, so that she's a great one to get information from, and she's responsive to questions as well. The National Weather Service is the definitive source, right? And if you follow them on social media, you will get the periodic weather briefing slides that they present to the federal community and local community during storms. So I follow the National Weather Service Twitter account, as well as the one that's specific to New Orleans or Louisiana. Side note, the director or the head of the National Hurricane Center is a guy named Ken Graham. And Ken spent years, I think he might have been from New Orleans, but certainly spent years here in New Orleans before he took that job. So he is super knowledgeable. I saw him on national news the other day, and he understands not only the weather and hurricanes, but he was in New Orleans until fairly recently when he moved to Florida to run the National Hurricane Center. I mentioned Margaret Orr. There's another now retired meteorologist named Bob Breck, B-R-E-C-K. He is very active on Facebook, and you can look him up. I think he also has a website where he will post his own take on the weather in New Orleans. But again, I think any local source is going to be better than certainly general news organizations. And even the Weather Channel, you know, we all laugh about Jim Cantore and you don't want to see him on your street. They do a great job, but I feel like they still are very sensationalist. And you really want to get the local news and what's going on. Let's see. Before we move on, I want to talk about a sponsor, the Old 77 Hotel. And specifically, I don't want you to let today's topic dissuade you from visiting or even moving to New Orleans. You just got to be prepared, especially during hurricane season. But when you do visit, you are going to need a place to stay. And I definitely recommend the Old Number 77 Hotel. It's in a great location in the Warehouse District, just a couple blocks from the French Quarter. It's close to lots of great places to eat and drink, and it's near the streetcar lines. I also love that they have a rotating art exhibit that's free, and it's put together by Wear Your Art. That's another organization we need to get on the podcast. The Old Number 77 has a wide range of choices when it comes to rooms. They have interior rooms for people who don't want any hint of daylight after a long night out. And by the way, those rooms would actually be a great choice if you want to hide from the storm. So if you decide to evacuate in place, they're interior rooms. So that's a pretty good thing. The Old 77 also has premium rooms and artist loft suites curated by New Orleans artists. There's really a ton of choices for a small hotel. And if all that wasn't enough, they have an award-winning restaurant, Compare Le Pen. And here's an insider's tip. Go during happy hour and get a couple small plates. I especially love their biscuits with the fresh butter they make. It makes a good accompaniment to their old-fashioned, which I'm also a big fan of. The Old Number 77 is located at 535 Chapatoulas Street. Use code BBOLD77 when you book a room and save 25%. Plus, you get a Bella Lanyap, a little something extra in the form of a $10 credit at Tootloff, a coffee and such in the morning. All right, let's get back to our discussion of hurricane prep. So again, we talked about what to do, what to have, how to make the decision to stay or go, a little bit about what the city does in terms of the levees and the pumps. We should also mention, like anywhere, what do you do if there's a tornado? You want to get to an interior room with as many walls between you and the outside as possible. Again, as part of your storm planning, you want to think about that ahead of time. So in our case, we have a closet kind of in the middle of the house. It's a coat closet, and if I'm being honest, it's a little overfilled right now, but that's where I would go. So there would be the walls of the closet with no windows, and because it's in the center of the house, I'd also be protected by the exterior walls. It may sound a little crazy, but last night I heard Margaret Orr, again, a local meteorologist, talking about when her kids were little, she would put a bike helmet on them and put them, you know, in the safe room with her. Those are things you got to think about if you stay. So you want to have whatever protection you can, but you want to have that planned out. You want to go into the middle of the house if you can. You need to think about what if water does come into the house. So if it's, in my case, my expectation was that if it was just a little bit of water, one, I've tried to stop it with the sandbags, but if a little bit of water came in, I have towels placed near those doors so that I'm ready to try to sop it up. I also have a wet vac so that I can try to suck it up again if it's not much. If it got to be too much, because you're only going to stop a little bit of water, if it got to be, say, feet of water flowing in, then that's where your emergency plan comes in terms of how you're going to evacuate. You know, do you have a raft? Do you have a boat? Do you have whatever it might be? As is often the case, I was really going stir crazy and was a bit bored, as it became fairly obvious yesterday that we probably weren't going to get too many effects. And so I went for three separate walks. But one of the things I did was kind of note where people had parked their cars and what they had done in terms of prep. Because I was just thinking about, so I put my car in a parking garage that's miles away. And that's great. The theory was that if it flooded, I wasn't going to be able to use it anyway, and I'd rather protect it. But I noticed that people put cars on the neutral ground, and yet two blocks away, there's another neutral ground that looked to be much higher. So I thought, well, that's interesting, and maybe I'd watch that and see if that's an option next time. But again, that emergency evacuation plan, what are you going to do? How are you going to get out? Are you able-bodied enough to get out? And again, that kind of gets back to what do you do with your family plan. Another thing is, what do you do if the power goes out? So again, hurricane season is in the summer or starts in the summer. It gets hot. You know, last week it was in the mid-90s and it had been in the mid-90s for about 2 weeks. So a couple years ago, I was here during Hurricane Isaac and the power went out for several days and it was brutally hot. As I recall, I think I slept on the front porch for a couple nights. It wasn't cool, but it was cooler than being in the house, and we didn't have a generator at the time. So you kind of got to think about that. And again, you know, what are you going to do if the power goes out and it's 90 degrees? Again, that also kind of gets back to this choice about what are you going to do in the health of your family or yourself, right? Let's take a look at some other questions, see what I might have missed. Jeremy Traeger. I'm going to read a little bit of this. He sent this, I think, on Friday or Saturday. I'm driving in my U-Haul right now to move to New Orleans, and this has really woken me up to the fact that I'm unprepared to live in a place like this. And he kind of goes on about he's never really been in a place where he was without power for more than a couple hours. So if the storm passes and it brings relief to us all, it's woken me up to the fact I'm unprepared. So as a newbie, what would I need to do? So he's particularly worried about power outage in the heat. So a couple of things. If the power goes out and there's not widespread flooding, it's just the power's out, that might be a time to go to the old number 77 or go to another hotel or somebody's house that has power. Once you get to know people, so we kind of, there's probably a half dozen people I exchanged messages with about staying or going. And the people that stayed, we all just kept checking in with each other in case somebody needs something, or needs help or whatever that might be. So that's one thing, Jeremy. Hopefully the items that we're going through today will help you prepare a list. There's also the city has a, I think it's a website, but I follow it on social media, on Twitter. It's NOLA Ready. I'm almost certain they have a website. And that's a really good place to get sort of a checklist and to work through and add your own personal things. The other thing is to try not to panic and to think about it ahead of a storm. So if you are a new New Orleanian or moving to New Orleans or thinking about it and you're listening to this in mid-July 2019 or later and there's no storm, now's the time to stop and spend a little bit of time planning this stuff out so that when it comes, it's a matter of execution of the plan. You know, for us, it's still stressful, but we looked at the weather, we made a decision, and then we just acted on all the things we already do, okay? We know we got to get stuff in. We know here's the list of important items. Here's the things my wife is going to take. Here's the things that are important that are going to stay that have to get lifted up. We know the sandbags, the generator, getting gas, all those sorts of things, thinking about what we're going to do with the car. So just making that plan, and hopefully that's what today's show is helping you do. I don't see it here, but someone said, what do you do if you are visiting? And, you know, if you're a visitor to New Orleans and a storm comes, again, that's where if you're in a hotel, the hotel is going to be prepared for it and they will offer advice and you need to listen to them, right? Sometimes they'll shut down, but mostly they won't. They know that they're effectively a shelter and so they will help you. Many years ago, I was in a pretty bad hurricane and flood in Houston and I stayed in a hotel for the weekend. And it lost power. All the places lost power. But there was a hotel across the street that ended up taking all their food and offering like maybe a $2 lunch or something because the food was going to go bad and they were trying to be a resource for people. So if you're in a hotel and the storm looks bad, you need to decide, can you get out? Is there time? Do you want to get out? You know, obviously flights and all that will start to get backed up, but you want to figure that stuff out. But you want to rely on the hotel. You know, chances are they are experienced with this, and you want to see what their plan is and their advice. Let's see, Nathan Norsworthy, who's a very active member in our Facebook group and a Louisianian, says, has the Mississippi ever come over near the French Quarter? I know it came close in 1927 and they blew dynamite to alleviate New Orleans. Yeah, and that whole thing is a story for another day. But what's interesting about the French Quarter and the levee system is today when you wander through New Orleans, the levees in most places are 20 feet high, sometimes higher. But when levees were first constructed in New Orleans, they were only 4, 5, 6 feet tall, and they were designed with the idea that they would be overtopped and there would be some runoff there, and that was just part of life in the city. Now, what was also different is that the Army Corps of Engineers wasn't trying to actively control the river. So the more we've tried to control the river, essentially the more we've funneled it faster and faster through a narrower and narrower space. So it's coming down even faster. And with climate change and global warming, there's more runoff, there's more water coming into the river from up north. It's coming down through a tighter space faster and faster. And that's what's causing the increase, in part, what's causing the increased stress on the levees. But in its modern form, no, Nathan, the water's never overtopped the levees, really anywhere in the city. In Katrina, it was an issue of the levees breaking, but certainly not in the French Quarter. But it is important to remember that the French Quarter of today is very, very different than it would have been a couple hundred years ago when the first levees would have been very low and they would have been designed with the idea that they would overtop and then that water would sort of be caught. But it wasn't uncommon to have water in the city, and it was just part of life in the city. Let's see, Kristen Ketchel-Bain, I hope I'm saying your name right, Kristen, asked about the cars in the neutral ground, but it doesn't seem like they're much higher than the street. Again, I mentioned that sometimes a foot or two makes a world of difference, and sometimes you can see that it really ends up being much more than that. If the neutral ground's very built up, I'm thinking about Napoleon Avenue, where it's very crowned, and gosh, there might be 4 feet of difference, maybe more, from a driveway out to the middle of the neutral ground. Now that's a very large, wide street. So the distance from somebody's driveway to the middle of the neutral ground, it might be 30, 40, 50 feet. So you could have a very big difference. And that could certainly be the difference between getting water in your car and not getting water in the car. Let's see. I want to just check my notes and see if there's anything else here. I am fading. Again, it's been I'm grateful that the storm didn't really do much, but it's been kind of an exhausting several weeks or several days. It feels like several weeks here. Let's see. Again, we've talked about what the city does on a very high level, what you need to think about in terms of preparation and making the decision to stay or go. We've talked about, again, some of the things you need to do when you come back if you've left, and also, you know, where to get information. And that's probably the key. Go do your prep now. Have the information sources ready so that you know, one, how to get information on what the city thinks is likely to happen, but also, if you stay, how to get real-time information. And also think about the fact that what are you going to do if the power goes out? You know, what's your plan? Can you stay? How are you going to get information? Have you charged up batteries? Do you have an internet source? What if the internet goes down? Do you have a hotspot or something like that? Right? There's a lot to think about, but the time to think about it is not when the storm's here. Now again, unlike other parts of the country, we have to deal with earthquakes or tornadoes, although we get some tornadoes now. What you mostly have time to prepare when the storms come to New Orleans, and so you want to use that time to have a plan and to think about that. All right, I was looking for my notes and the one I want is gone, but I think we're going to end there. We'll put information that we talked about over in the show notes at beyondbourbonst.com/94. If you want to financially support the show and be a member of the Super Crew, again, go check that out at patreon.com/beyondbourbonst. If you want to join our free Facebook group, again, I'll put links in the show notes, but you can find us by searching Facebook groups for Beyond Bourbon Street Crew, K-R-E-W-E. It's a really great community of more than 2,000 people who share experiences and answer questions, and it's just a real community. It's a lot of fun to be a part of, so I hope you'll join us there.
If you're enjoying the podcast, please share it with someone who loves New Orleans. New episodes are available every other Wednesday. Until next time, laissez le bon temps rouler.
Thanks for listening to the Beyond Bourbon Street podcast. Find us anytime at beyondbourbonst.com.